I'm Demae Roberts. Thanks for joining me on a special membership drive edition of Stage and Studio. We'll talk with two authors beginning their book tours, and we're going to give away some books when you call in at 1-877-500-5266. That's KBOO, or join online at KBOO.fm and become a KBOO member. First up, we hear a short preview from Seattle author Niecy Shaul about her neo-Victorian alternate history novel called Everfair. And we're going to talk with Peter Ho Davies, the author of The Fortunes, that captures 150 years of Chinese-American history told through four different characters. Right now, though, we're joined by Niecy Shaul. Are you there, Niecy?
I'm here. Hi,
hey, great to hear you, and congratulations on your debut novel. It's gotten stellar reviews, especially the Washington Post review that drew my attention to your book. I'm so happy for you. This is fantastic. This is happening for you. I know you've been working on it for several years.
Yes, I have. It's like you have your, like you're trying to get a drawer unstuck, and then all of a sudden you pull and it comes loose and you like fall over on your butt.
And then, but you find everything that you need right there, right? On the floor.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm looking at the cover of your book and it is so beautiful. I know I don't want to judge a book by the cover, but you know, but this artwork is incredible. You've got this globe. You want to describe it a little bit? Just very short description?
Yeah, sure. Two hands, one black, one a prosthetic arm. It's sort of a golden glow around this pierced globe-shaped lamp with insects flying about it. The lamp is a national symbol of Everfair.
Well, Everfair, I want to talk about that. Your book combines narratives from Belgium, Great Britain, and the Congo. And Everfair is an imaginary utopia, and it's a sort of a neo-Victorian utopia, I guess. Would you describe this land of Everfair?
Everfair is sort of carved out of King Leopold II's personal fiefdom in Central Africa. My conceit is that a bunch of British socialists and African-American Christian missionaries got together and bought some land from Leopold to create this utopia.
Well, why focus on the history of Belgium's colonization of Congo through this, shall we say, a little bit of steampunk, you know, genre with Everfair as this utopia? What made you decide to focus it on this history this way?
So the steampunk genre is very definitely a 19th century focused glimpse at what could have been. And to me, focusing on the human rights disaster that was King Leopold's reign over the Congo was just a natural thing. I mean, I could not avert my eyes from this tragedy where millions of people died, and I thought it was important to to redeem it.
Well, do you find that it's healing, you know, the wounds of the atrocities that occurred and the enslavement that happened in the Congo at that time?
Perhaps a tiny, tiny bit.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit much for a book to take on.
But, you know, this utopia sounds like that's part of, you know, a place, you know, a place where I guess healing could happen.
Yes, I hope so. I hope so. I hope that it's a healing experience for people to read it, but I hope that they go on and then, you know, manifest that healing in a real way in the world.
Well, how is your book tour going? I know that we're just catching you right before you're going on your flight, and we're going to have you on later in the year during OriCon, which is a writer's festival in Portland. But how is your book tour going?
It's going up and down and back and forth, and I'm hardly able to keep track. there are people singing the Everfair National Anthem along with me at every stop.
Really?
Yes.
How does that go? How does that go? You know I'm going
to
ask you that.
Like
10 seconds of it.
Everfair, Everfair, my home. there.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I can't wait to finish your book. And as I said, I'm going to have you on later on. And, you know, I'm just kudos to you. Congratulations. Nisi Shawl's debut novel, Everfair, is available on Amazon and basically everywhere. You can find out more at nisishawl.com or stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I have all the links there to her book. Nisi, I look forward to talking with you later on in the year, actually very soon, in a month or so. Thanks for joining us while you're on your book tour.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
I can't wait to see you. You have a great tour.
Thank you.
Take care. And we have Nisi Shawl's Everfair, a wonderful, beautiful book, available for your membership here at KBOO. Only one copy by calling 1-877-500-5266. That's KBOO. That spells KBOO. Let's check in with Membership Central.
Ah, thank you, Dee Mae. My name is Justin. I'm joined by Ani, and it is a thrill to be here again at Stage and Studio during our membership drive and reminding the community that this kind of poetry and theater and history and fantasy and art and all of these different perspectives are made possible by you, the listening peoples. So call us up, listening peoples, right now, toll free, 877-500-5266, and we could put this one copy of Everfair, a novel by Nisi Shawl, in your hands if you could start a monthly contribution of at least $6.25. 877-500-KBOO.
You know, what I love about this is, in fact, the idea that, well, you know, social change work, public affairs, it's not real, it involves a lot of listening to facts. It involves a lot of analysis. But every now and again, it is so very, very important, equally important, I think, to engage our imaginations. And there is very few better ways to do that than looking through the lens of alternate histories and fantasy. And I am so very thankful for Nisi Shawl's work. She's a great writer. I tend to go to those OriCons that they were talking about, helping to catch her the next time she's coming through to OriCon this November. Science fiction and fantasy is a wonderful way to reimagine our world. And with the talented writers like Nisi Shawl, they give us a platform from which to do that. Engage your imagination and engage your community right now with your membership to KBOO Community Radio. Get this copy of Everfair with your contribution of just $75 or more to your community radio station, 877-500-5266. Online, you can join at kboo.fm, or you can always come in 20 Southeast 8th.
That's right. We are so grateful for everyone who has supported KBOO, both on the outside, listening in, as it were, all of you in Radio Land, and our stalwart ambassadors, our program hosts, our experts. Dee Mae has been bringing us news and information about the theater world and performance art for a long, long time, and we are so grateful. And you are, because your life is enriched by this. There's so many ways. We have such a modest goal. We want to make sure that Dee Mae hits her goal. It's $200. We can do more than that if three of you start that $6.25 membership. You can do that online at kboo.fm, but the only thing that sounds as good as the voices of our experts is the sound of ringing phones. So please do that. Right now, we're going to get out of the way and hand it back to Stage and Studio. Meanwhile, we're ready to meet the next KBOO member when they call 877-500-5266.
And I hope people do call in right now to get that copy of Nisi Shawl's Everfair. It's an incredible book, and I hope that it's for $75. What a deal. And you become a member and support Stage and Studio and KBOO and arts programming. Next up, we have author Peter Ho Davies on the line to talk about his newest novel, The Fortunes. Hey, Peter, are you there?
I am. Hey, Dee Mae.
Hey, nice. Thank you for joining us on Stage and Studio. I've been reading your, speed reading your book this weekend. It's been incredible. It's been getting some rave reviews around the country, too. And Peter, as I must say, as a biracial Asian American, I was thrilled to read a novel depicting 150 years of Chinese American history from a biracial Asian American writer. I'm also Chinese American. So congrats on this epic novel. I mean, I remember Kung Fu, and I grew up with, this biracial racial, you know, character played by David Carradine, of all people. But it was sort of a nice little, you know, guilty pleasure there. So why did you decide to pick four characters to tell these stories depicting 150 years of history? It starts from the gold rush up until modern transnational adoptions from China. How did you decide this kind of format?
No, that's a great question. I mean, I think with a lot of books, they evolve as you're writing them. I think the first section, you know, is about the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. And I got interested in that actually when I was out on the West Coast. I used to teach at the University of Oregon in Eugene. And I took a train journey across the country and learned about the Chinese building the railroad over the Sierras. And that was about 20 years ago. And that was the first inkling of this project. For a while, I thought the novel would be just about that subject. But then as I began to think about it, I became very interested in the way various Chinese-American figures have become representative in various ways of the community. So there's a character that I'm focusing on. He is referred to in the history books called Ah Ling, who works for Charles Crocker, one of the builders of the railroad. And he is supposed to have inspired Crocker. His example as a manservant to Crocker is supposed to inspire Crocker to hire 10,000 Chinese to work on the railroad. And I thought, what would it be like to be that guy? He's really only a footnote in biographies of Crocker. But I thought, what would it be like to be that man, to both inspire the hiring of 10,000 of one's countrymen, but also to have them hired into very difficult work circumstances? They're paid as cheap labor. The work is incredibly dangerous and grueling for them. So I thought that positioning of that figure as a representative figure seemed like a really ripe one to explore in fiction. And then having thought about him in that capacity, other characters in the book like Anna May Wong, the early Chinese-American movie star, Vincent Chin, you know, the victim of a terrible hate crime in the 1980s, who becomes a kind of icon for the Asian-American political movement, these representational figures became very interesting to me. And the book began to be themed around exploring their lives.
Well, I mean, you know, three of them are historic characters. Another one, Vincent Chin, who was brutally murdered in Detroit auto workers, by people who thought he was Japanese. I think I read that you were living in Detroit at the time, or that
no,
you were
I
affected
near
somehow.
Detroit now.
Okay.
Yeah, I live near Detroit now in Ann Arbor, but I can remember when I grew up in England. I came from a town called Coventry. It's in the Midlands, as we call it in England, very like the Midwest in the U.S., and car country. And I can remember as a kid in the 80s, friends of my family, parents of friends who were feeling threatened by their jobs at the time in the auto industry. So I knew of the Vincent story even then, even at that distance, even in Britain. And, you know, realizing that I was now living close to the scene of that attack, I think it felt almost inevitable that I should engage with that story in the fiction.
And so the fourth contemporary character, though, is based on somebody, shall we say, is similar to you?
Yeah, he's a figure who's, let's say, semi-autobiographical. He both is and is not me. It's funny, we were talking about, you know, that old Kung Fu show, way back when. I'm talking to you right now from Boston. And there's one detail. This character in the final section is himself a writer, a mixed-race writer, and so he obviously has some similarities to my life. And at one moment, he's offered a job writing sort of dime store TV novelizations of the Kung Fu TV series. And I was actually offered that job about 15 years ago when I lived in Boston. Didn't come to anything, but it seemed like a weird and sort of interesting thing. I never got to do it. I don't think those books ever got written. But of course, in fiction, you can explore what would have happened if one had done something along those lines. But the truth is that you know, I realized as I was writing about all of these characters who struggle with the idea of how does one person, one Chinese American, represent a community, I realized that, of course, is a novelistic anxiety. It's very true for all writers of color. How do we speak for a community? How do we speak for others in various ways? I have those anxieties myself. Sometimes for writers, those anxieties are self-censoring. They stop us from writing. But in a sense, I wrote the book into that anxiety. And having realized that I shared it with my characters, seemed only honest to sort of step back a little bit, pull the curtain back, and fess up to say, well, here's a writer character who struggles with some of these same questions at the end of the book.
Yeah, it's a huge responsibility, and, you know, this whole represent your race, you know, kind of
sure.
You know, pressure.
Responsibility, really.
Yeah, it's unrealistic, too, because, you know, you're telling four different stories from history, essentially, and there is a lot of historic content, and I'm sure you did a lot of research on that, but you also told it in four different styles, from first person to third person, and so why did you decide to, you know, speak in different, I guess, writers' voices with these characters?
Sure. I think one of the things that I'm really drawn to in that space is the sense of, you know, we have different periods within the 1860s, the 1930s, and the 1980s and the present day. And so it felt as though different voices were ways of capturing those different periods and those lives. So, you know, when I write about Anna May Wong in the 1930s, the section is told in very short vignettes, and they almost echo the title cards
of silent films.
Short scenes in movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just fascinated by this book. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. My guest is Peter Ho Davies, author of this new book, The Fortunes. And on this Membership Drive edition on Stage and Studio, you can pick up a hardcover copy right now by calling 1-877-500-5266. That is KABU. And you become a member. And there's also a pair of tickets for Little Shop of Horrors at Portland Center Stage at the Armory. It's, you know, lots of fun stuff here. So call now at 1-877-500-5266 KABU. Peter, how much research did you spend on the book before writing it?
Oh, a lot. Not just before.
As you were writing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do the research. I'm inspired by it. I jump into fiction. When I run out of ideas or I get stuck or I realize that I don't know something else, I go back to the research and dig further in certain ways. These characters, though, presented really interesting and different challenges. The details of Arling's life are not very well known. We have sort of white reporters of that era telling us about Chinatown, but often in exoticized and orientalized ways. But we don't have accounts by those particular Chinese. Many of those laborers were illiterate themselves. They haven't left records. So there was an effort to try and imaginatively and empathically reach into those territories. When writing about Anna May Wong, she's a great celebrity in her day, gives interviews all over the place, so there's a very large public record. And yet I began to realize and was freed by the idea that, you know, what she says to a celebrity newspaper or magazine is only as accurate as we might imagine what we read in celebrity magazines today. So that beneath the public face, there's another surface.
Well,
that's the space where the fiction explores.
I mean, with the historic characters like Anna May Wong and Vincent Chin, did you contact any like descendants of family members or anybody that you know might be, I don't know, have more first person accounts?
I didn't. I mean, I read a lot of biographies and I read a lot of accounts written both after, but also written in the newspapers in the same period as, say, the Vincent Chin case was taking place. You know, I remember reading a remarkable piece by Michael Moore, the filmmaker, when he was a journalist, interviewing one of the killers, in fact, in the newspaper time. And all those things were incredibly useful and revealing to me. But I also wanted to leave some room for this to be a work of fiction, not just a work of reportage or documentary. There's real value in those things as well. But my forte is in the fictional space, and I wanted to leave some room for the imagination.
So there is a bit of literary license in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you find on your tour now, I mean, as you're getting responses on your book, The Fortunes, that people still need to know more about Chinese-American history?
I think that's true. I mean, even that's true even for the community. I mean, I've talked to friends who were involved in the Vincent Chin case and the aftermath of it, who now teach that case in university and in Ann Arbor. And I think while that case is very well remembered by me and by a number of people of my generation, I think they say that sometimes members of the younger generation, even Asian Americans of the younger generation, don't know the history of the case.
That's
so there's
true.
A need for that education. But the real pleasure, actually, of being on tour and talking about the book is meeting so many people of mixed race background. You know, I remember growing up and feeling really unique in that regard.
Right.
Half Welsh, half Chinese, what a strange combination. And always at readings, I meet people with similar, not exactly the same, but similar backgrounds. And it's almost as though that loneliness that I think a lot of us feel is healed by that sense of sharing, this sense of these very mixed backgrounds.
Well, mixed race is the largest growing population now, so
absolutely.
I'm not surprised to hear that. Now, you're going to be, you're on tour right now, and you're going to be in Portland this Friday, September 16th at 7:30 p.m.
Yeah.
at Powell City of Books. So we're going to welcome you. That's awesome. What can we expect at your reading?
Oh, well, I'll hopefully take some questions. I always enjoy engaging with the audience at these events. But I'll also read a section, probably a section about Anna May. I think her experiences you know, being a star, but also playing in Hollywood during the era, really, of Yellowface. I know some of those practices still persist amazingly till this day.
Oh, well, it's still a big topic, especially in Hollywood, with Scarlett Johansson being cast in, you know, in Ghost in the Shell. And, you know, it's happening all the time now. So
Exactly. It's extraordinary. It's still with us. But also, I mean, she also is grappling with an era when anti-miscegenation laws were still in effect.
And she couldn't kiss anybody outside her race, in other words.
That's right. And couldn't even do it on screen, even if the other character she was kissing was an Asian character in yellow face played by a white man. The Hays Code forbade those kind of depictions. So it's extraordinary, the irony she grapples with in her lifetime.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm interested in the journey she takes back to China in this period. And one of the great and very sad ironies is this feeling that, you know, in the U.S., she's Chinese. And once she gets to China, she's seen as more American. She is very much suspended between these two places, and neither of them are quite home for her.
Yeah, she can't win at all. But yet, you know, she's this huge, amazing talent that, if had she been white, I think would have been a great star.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, she was a great star, but she would have had more opportunities for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Well, Peter Ho Davies, has been a pleasure talking with you, author of The Fortunes, and I really appreciate you joining us during this membership drive. You have a great time when you're in Portland. Yes.
I look forward to it.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio, and I just want to thank you all for joining me on this special edition of Stage and Studio. We have Peter Ho Davies' book, The Fortunes, to offer as a thank you gift, as well as one pair of tickets to offer for the big, fun, beautiful musical, part Motown, part doo-wop musical, The Little Shop of Horrors at Portland Center Stage at the Armory, which is opening this Friday, running through October 16th downtown. These tickets are valued at $50, and you can pick them up for a membership of, I believe, $90 right now by calling 1-877-500-5266. That's KBOO. And becoming a member or renewing your membership, show your support of KBOO and arts programming and Stage and Studio. Little Shop of Horrors is about a man-eating plant who is cared for by a shy and love-struck Seymour. So I don't know if anybody remembers that song, Ani. I don't know if you remember Suddenly Seymour.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
It's such great songs. Let's sing together, Ani. You know, I mean, it's got a great score and some fantastic backup singers who, you know,
Little Shop of Horrors is a
little
fun
shop,
production,
Little
right?
Shop of Horrors. Remember that, Ani?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I hope people call in right now. We got one pair of tickets, and we've got these two beautiful hardcover books. I mean, my goodness, and only a $200 goal.